Hi everyone, it's Leslyn Keith here again with another Research Update Flash Briefing. I'm the Director of Research and President of the Board for the Lipedema Project. I like to keep you abreast of the latest research of relevance to lipedema with these flash briefings. The paper I'd like to talk to you about today is Lymphoscintigraphic Alterations in Lower Limbs in Women with Lipedema in Comparison to Women with Overweight Obesity. And this is done by some researchers in Poland. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal Frontiers in Physiology in April of 2023. The aim of this study was to evaluate lymphoscintigraphic alterations in women with lipedema and compare those to alterations that were found in women who are overweight and obese. And so first, to define for you what a lymphoscintigraphy is. And this is a nuclear medicine imaging technique used to visualize regional lymphatic drainage. So although it's really good at showing the functioning of the lymphatics, you really can't see the actual anatomy. Like you can't see how the valves are working or anything like that. You just can see that does fluid get through to that area and where it's supposed to go to drain. And so the methods they used for the study, they had 82 women that were recruited from an outpatient angiology clinic in Poland, and they were divided into two groups. They had 51 women in the lipedema group, and they had 31 women in the overweight obese group. All participants were evaluated with anthropomorphic measures, bioimpedance for body composition, lymphoscintigraphy for the lower body was then also performed. And the study groups were really matched by age and by volume of their legs. So let's look at those two groups. The lipedema group had an average age of 43. And in order to be a part of that group, they cannot have progressed to having lipolymphedema, meaning that they had just lipedema and they did not also have lymphedema. And that was also very similar for what they used for the 31 women in the overweight obese group. The average age in that group was 45, and they could not have any signs of lipedema, and they could not have lymphedema that was induced by their obesity. So in other words, no lipedema and no lymphedema, just diagnoses of either overweight or obesity. So the exclusion, of course, neither group could have lymphedema, and they also did not want them to have edema as part of a chronic venous insufficiency. So they wanted to see, is there any edema associated just with the lipedema? One of the things that they were looking at. So no lymphedema and no edema because of chronic venous insufficiency, no heart failure, no kidney or liver insufficiency, no abnormal TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. They could not have diabetes, cancer, pregnancy, and they couldn't have been pregnant for at least 6 months prior to doing the study. And so it's not that none of these things happen in conjunction with lipedema or overweight and obesity. They were just trying to get people that didn't have those comorbidities because sometimes that could cloud the results of your study. So what data did they collect? Well, of course, they did the lymphoscintigraphy on all of the participants. And those anthropomorphic measures that I talked about, they included taking their weight, their height, doing measurements to calculate their leg volume, doing all kinds of body measures, including on the leg, they would also measure the hip and the waist. And then they can calculate various things from all those anthropomorphic measures. So they would calculate BMI. They calculated a waist to hip ratio, a waist to height ratio. And then they did with bioimpedance, they did that body composition. And so the various body composition measures they looked at were percent body fat, mass or weight of body fat, lean body mass, total body water, and also visceral fat, so the fat that's around the organs. So a lot of great measures that they took. Let's look at their results. So looking at just the lipedema group to start with, because they had a diagnosis of lipedema, they also wanted to get additional characteristics collected about those participants who had lipedema. And so they asked them, when did the symptoms start? So when do we think that the onset of lipedema occurred? And 35% of them said that it occurred around puberty. And so that was the largest group. Another 29% said it started around pregnancy. And then almost 10% said that it started around menopause. And then we look at the stage of lipedema, stage 1, 2, and 3. The largest group was stage 2 lipedema, and that was 45%, but not much smaller was stage 1, which was 43%. We only had 12% of the participants that were in stage 3, and this may be because that once you get to stage 3, a lot of women have also developed lymphedema. And remember, they did not want to have participants who had lymphedema along with lipedema. And so the stage 3 was a smaller percentage of their participants. And then the type of lipedema, you remember the type is where you have the lipedema fat being deposited. And so very interesting, of the 5 types, type 1 and type 5, type 1 is hip and buttocks only, and type 5 is the worst of the symptoms are in the calves. They had no participants that were either type 1 or type 5. So all of them were type 2, 3, or 4. And of those 3 types, most of the participants were type 2. And that was the fat deposits were from the waist to the knees. So mostly the hip, buttocks, and thighs, 43% of the participants. And then the next largest group was type 3. And that goes from the waist to the ankles. And so that was 33% of the participants. And lastly, type 4 is the arms. And remember, the arms usually occur also with one of the other types. And so they did not say how many and which types they also presented with, but likely each of these participants with type 4 also were either in the type 2 or type 3 category. And so the type 4 participants who had it in their arms was 23.5%. And so that's a lot of women that have it in their arms as well as in their legs. We're seeing that the arms are much more common than we previously thought. Some other characteristics of this group, actually, I have some comparison of lipedema symptoms and how often it showed up in the lipedema group compared to how often these symptoms showed up in the overweight obese group. And so I already told you about the average age was 43 for lipedema, 45 for the overweight obese group. And now we look at pain, which remember, not all people with lipedema have pain, but most do. And in this group, 86% had pain. And so that's pretty consistent with what we're seeing is that not 100% of the participants had pain, but a pretty significant number. Now compare this to the obese overweight group, 43% had pain. And so this was a significant difference between the two groups. And then easy bruising. This was a more significant difference between the two groups. The lipedema group, 92% had easy bruising. And in the overweight obese group, it was only 19%. So quite a difference there. And then with edema, not a significant difference between the two groups, because they were really trying to weed out people who had venous insufficiency related edema and people who had lymphedema. And so in this group, even after weeding out that lipedema group had 69% had edema and the overweight obese group had 52%. But these were close enough in percentage that it was deemed not significant. And leg volume, very interesting in this, that the leg volume between the two groups, there was not a significant difference. If you looked at the whole numbers, then yes, the lipedema group had a slightly greater volume, but it really wasn't significant when you compared that to the overweight obese group. And then another interesting finding I thought in this study was when we compared the weight between the two groups. And I think generally we think that of the lipedema group as having more weight. Not so in this study. And it was a significant difference. The overweight obese group, they were an average of 219 pounds or 99.5 kilograms. And this is versus the lipedema group, 191 pounds or 86.5 kilograms. So the lipedema group was lower weight. And so that followed then that the BMI was lower for lipedema as well, 32 versus 36 in the obese group. And then the weight to height and the weight to hip ratio was as expected, and it was a significant difference between the two groups. Lipedema typically will have a metabolically better waist to hip and waist to height ratio, and that was the case in this study. Lipedema group for waist to height was 0.84, whereas overweight and obesity was 0.93. The lower the number, the better it is. And that was the same thing for the waist to height, 0.59 versus 0.67 in the overweight obese group. So that was as you would expect. And then when we looked at lean body mass, so the weight of all the lean body mass in your mostly muscle, but also other connective tissue and stuff like that, it was less in the lipedema group. And that's what we're finding. It's consistent with other studies that we have less lean mass in lipedema, 52 kilograms or 115 pounds in lipedema versus 56 or 123 pounds in the overweight obese group. Percent body fat, lower percent body fat, but not a significant amount in the lipedema group. The mass of body fat, when you were looking at how much does that body fat weigh instead of the percent of it, interestingly, it was significantly lower in the lipedema group, whereas with the percentage was not significant. So it was 34% for lipedema and 41% for overweight obese. Total body water, significant difference. And again, lipedema was lower. I found that to be an interesting outcome, 39% versus 42% in the overweight obese group. And visceral fat, this again for me was a surprise. They're saying that the difference was not significant, but the lipedema group had slightly more visceral fat. And typically, lipedema, you'll have slightly less or significantly less visceral fat. Not so in this study. And then we looked at the body measurements. This came as consistent with other groups that the waist measure is typically smaller in a person with lipedema versus someone with overweight and obesity. And that's what they had here. And the waist measure was the only measurement that had a significant difference. All the other measurements were not significant between the two groups. But now let's look at just the results from the imaging from lymphoscintigraphy. So normal imaging, a very small proportion of both groups had normal imaging, and actually more in the lipedema group had normal imaging than in the overweight obese group. So normal was 17% for lipedema, but only 3% for the overweight obese group, but this was not a significant difference. And interestingly, then when we look at the alterations, minor, moderate, and severe, none of those areas had a significant difference between the two groups. But in every case, there is fewer alterations in the lipedema group, not what I would have expected. And so minor alterations, 76% of the lipedema participants had minor alterations versus 93% in the overweight obese group. And for moderate alterations, 37% had moderate alterations in the lipedema group versus 52% in the overweight obese group. No participant had severe alterations to their lymphatics. So some of the things were kind of consistent with other studies, and some of the other results were a surprise. Some of the things that they found in this study is in the area of comorbidities, other conditions that the participants had. They found that there was not significant difference between the groups as far as their other comorbidities, but in every case, the lipedema group actually had fewer of these three comorbidities, and that was arterial hypertension, insulin resistance, and hypothyroidism. So the participants in the lipedema group had fewer incidences of those comorbidities than in the overweight obese group. And there was some surprises on that. Insulin resistance, no surprise. I would expect them to have fewer incidences of that. But hypothyroidism, I would have thought that the lipedema group had more of the hypothyroidism than the overweight obese. So that was a surprise. And the authors noted a trend indicating a relationship between a more advanced stage of lipedema or a more advanced stage of the more severity of obesity that was correlated with lymphatic alterations. I think that was kind of an expected outcome. So the worse you are, the more chance you would have some kind of alteration to your lymphatics. And the authors said that the alterations that they found, the mild and moderate alterations that they found, seemed to indicate more of a lymphatic overload, meaning an excessive amount of fluid, rather than a insufficiency of the lymphatic system. So that was interesting. So it's important to know when you look at a study, what are the limitations of the study? Because no study can be done perfectly. There's always going to be some limitations. And so the authors noted that the greatest limitation in this particular study was the difficulty diagnosing lipedema, especially when obesity is also present. And so the authors acknowledged that some of the participants may have been wrongly assigned to a particular group because of this limitation. And so that could have changed some of the outcomes and some of the results. And so this, what it did for me was it really highlighted the need for a specific definition of lipedema for research purposes that all researchers could consistently apply and help to make our lipedema research even better. The conclusions that they came up from this study, therefore, were that both lipedema and obesity display lymphatic alterations that are present before you can see the overt development of lymphedema. And that's very important. And then alterations in both groups were, as I said, minor or moderate, and that seemed to indicate an overload to the lymphatics rather than really an insufficiency of the lymphatic system. And because the alterations in lymphoscintigraphy imaging are similar in both groups, this imaging technique would not be a good diagnostic tool to differentiate between lipedema and overweight obesity. But I still feel that this paper is really important for women with lipedema because we are learning how lipedema may or may not be different from simple obesity. It really adds to the body of knowledge about lipedema itself. And as I said, it highlights the need for a case definition of lipedema to be used for research purposes. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you haven't already subscribed to our daily flash briefings of tips, tools, and research about lipedema, you can subscribe at Apple, Spotify, Amazon Alexa, or here at this website, lipedema-simplified.org/flash, where you'll find an archive of all of our flash briefings. You can now also follow Living Well with Lipedema on Amazon Music and get new episodes when they become available. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time for another Research Update Flash Briefing.